whenever you're ready, introduce yourself.
Okay. Hi, I'm Lisselle Joseph, and my pivotal circumstance happened when I lived in New York City in 2001. I'd recently moved there, and I was looking for a job, and my roommate at the time, her friend worked at a restaurant called Windows on the World, which was at the top of the World Trade Center. And he, you know, got me in, and I had my interview. I had my second interview and everything. And, you know, I pretty much had the job. And it was just, you know, a matter of me starting. And they showed me where I was going to sit, where my office was going to be, and everything like that. And before you know it, they called back and they said they were going to go with somebody else. And I was so angry at God because this was my dream job. And, you know, it was, you know, a hookup. It's who you know. And so I had first interview, second interview, and they showed me everything. I was introduced to people. And then all of a sudden, you know, no job. And I was just so angry at God. And of course, fast forward a few months later, and September 11th happened, and almost nobody made it out of Windows of the World. So I realized that I was spared. And even sometimes when I, you know, act bratty and I pray for something, it doesn't happen. And, you know, the Holy Spirit just reminds me, you know, September 11th, I know what happened. I know what's going to happen. And even though you may not understand, you just have to trust me.
My pivotal circumstance was when I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
My divorce.
After 23 years of marriage, my husband told me he wanted a divorce.
Having a special needs child, my husband and I suffered from infertility for about 5 years.
I lost a son, Joshua, 5 years ago.
Our son, Parker, was 16, and he had a car accident and died.
When I was diagnosed with a brain aneurysm about a year ago.
Being diagnosed with colon cancer.
Going through my wife's cancer with her.
I was told I had to have open heart surgery immediately.
I've got an x-ray here that shows that lymphoma right underneath my right clavicle.
Was at the end of a 9-month relationship.
The birth of one of our 4 children. She has a diagnosis of having Down syndrome.
One of them in my life happened this summer when I went on a missions trip to Peru.
When my brother got into a car accident when I was 10, and I saw the whole accident happen.
On August 6th, on a way to a meeting, I received a call. And the call went something like this. Due to a strategic reorganization, your services after 10 years are no longer needed.
The manager of the base bank at the base in Lubbock, Texas, gave me a call and said he wanted to take me to lunch. And I'm thinking to myself, why does this guy want to take me to lunch?
And my pivotal circumstance was when I was 19 years old and chose to have an abortion.
And I lost my hair at the age of 30.
My little son did and brought me outside and said, look up in the sky. And up in the sky, there was a plane skywriting, you plus God equals happiness. And it was like, it was just directly to me. It was almost like a burning bush moment.
There was a guy who came in my life about 10 years ago and told me about this church.
And all of that was the hand of God that I've seen every day. And God's faithfulness is even seen in my hair coming back.
It was just such a personal time for me to really know who God is.
And what at one point tested my faith has become an item that has strengthened it.
And from that day, I just gave everything up to him and asked him to forgive me.
Knowing that I'll see Joshua again gives us the faith and the courage and the hope to go on.
God has entered in my life in a new way. It wasn't that I didn't believe, but now it was practical and now it was real.
And shortly thereafter, in a church service, I responded to an invitation to Christ and invited Jesus into my life.
That's my story. That's my story.
That's my pivotal circumstance.
There is an undeniable relationship. An undeniable relationship between big, bad, bold, unexpected circumstances and our faith. And it is not an accidental, relationship. It is an intentional relationship, and it is a relationship that God has leveraged from the very beginning. In fact, James, the brother of Jesus, who is like right at the epicenter of what happened when Jesus died on the cross and rose from the dead and all the things that we draw from for our theology and our view of God. James, who is right in the middle of that, here's what he wrote. Listen to this. This is not written currently as we, you know, try to help God out of the box. He's, you know, kind of painted himself, the corner he's painted himself into. This is James right in the middle of all that activity. And here's what he said about the relationship between circumstances and our faith. He wrote this, and you don't need to turn to it. It's not the main passage for today. He says this in James chapter 1. He said, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind." Do what? "Because you know that the testing of your," what's the word? "Your faith." Wait a minute, testing of my faith? He goes, yeah, testing of your faith, testing of your faith. There is a connection between the trials you're going to experience and your faith. The testing of your faith produces something. It produces perseverance. It produces persevering faith. "Let perseverance finish its work." In other words, God is up to something in the big pivotal circumstances of life. "Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." In other words, James says, it's not accidental that Christians and non-Christians and people in general face these overwhelming circumstances, and it's not accidental that in the middle of those circumstances, something begins to happen to their faith in God. And that this is one of the things, this is one of the primary things God uses to grow our faith and to strengthen our faith. And it's one of the five things we would never, for the most part, sign up for. Because oftentimes, it's the negative, unexplainable circumstances, the very circumstances that have the potential and the power to turn us away from God. God almost always, if we will allow him, leverages to do something in us to make our faith stronger. It's not accidental. It's not just you. It's not an excuse to help God, you know, seem more palatable to people who are trying to figure God out. This is the way God works, and it's the way he has worked from the very beginning. But I think maybe the best illustration of this comes from a story from the life of Jesus that most all of you are familiar with. In fact, as soon as we start the story, you're going to know the end. And I want to get you to do what I've often asked you to do, to just slow your mind down and to experience this story with the characters. Because in this story, here's what we discover. And this is uncomfortable. In fact, for some of you, this is going to create a new category in your theology. In fact, it's a very uncomfortable category. It's a category that may create more questions than it does answer questions. But here's a situation in the life of Jesus where Jesus doesn't just leverage a pivotal circumstance to grow somebody's faith. He doesn't just leverage negative circumstances to grow someone's faith. In this story, Jesus actually creates negative circumstances in order to grow someone's faith. I want you to listen to this familiar story with this new grid in mind as we discover why God and how God uses pivotal circumstances to do something in us, but not to us. The passage is John chapter 11. John chapter 11, if you want to follow along, we'll put these verses on the screen for you. John chapter 11. And in John chapter 11, we find the only recording in the scripture of the story of Lazarus. Let me read this story to you. John chapter 11, verse 1. I'm going to draw your attention to a few words. "Now a man named Lazarus was sick." That's how the story begins. "He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha." All three of these characters are close friends of Jesus. He has eaten in their home. They've supported him financially. "So the sisters," after their brother became sick, "their sisters sent word to Jesus," and listen to the message they sent. They sent a messenger to find Jesus. Jesus is 2 to 3, maybe 4 days away by travel, by foot. And they send the message, and listen to the message. Here's the message. "Lord, the one you love is sick." Now this is dramatic. Not, "Lord, Lazarus is sick." "Lord, the one you love is sick." And they knew that Jesus would automatically know who they were talking about because it came from Mary and Martha. And their relationship with Jesus was so close that they could simply describe Lazarus as "one that you love." Now, Jesus has healed many, many, many people, many, many, many strangers, people he never saw but once. In some cases, he healed people he never even met just by speaking the word. And so, of course, when Lazarus became sick and it was a life-threatening illness, of course, these friends of Jesus would call for Jesus. Verse 4, here's a new category for you. "When he," Jesus, "heard this," Jesus said, "this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory." Jesus creates a category, and the category is this, that sickness, illness, disease can be for God's glory. To which I say, okay, I like the glory where, like, I throw the winning touchdown pass, and then the reporters put their microphone in my face and go, "How'd you do it?" And I say, "I just want to give Jesus and God the glory." I'd like to sign up for that, you know, that program. Or, you know, you win an award and you're up in front of everybody in your company or maybe in your industry and you get to say a few words and you say, "I just want to give all the glory to God. He's the one that gave me the strength to, you know, make so many sales." Or you're at school and, you know, I like that kind of glory. Something really good happens and I get to say, "You know what? It's not me, it's God." And Jesus says, "Well, that's good. But there's another program. In fact, it's really a more effective program. It's the program where something really, really negative is introduced into your life. And God says, and I'm going to allow that, and I'm going to leverage it for my glory. No, it is for God's glory so that God's Son, that would be Jesus, may be glorified through it. So just kind of log that away. Verse 5, in case we missed it the first time. Now Jesus, this is John writing this, he's right in the middle of this. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. In other words, you need to understand in this story, this isn't just a family he met one day. There's something about this relationship that goes beyond the average relationship. He knew their names. He knew where they lived. He had been in their home. They had supported him. Just in case you missed it, there is a special relationship between Jesus in this family. Verse 6, so when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. He did exactly what you would not expect him to do. One of the reasons I believe that Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are actual historical documents that record the lives and words and events of Jesus are stories like this one and statements like this one. Because if you were writing fiction in order to get people to love and follow the teachings of Jesus, you wouldn't write this story. Everything about it is wrong. Everything about it is a bit infuriating. Everything about it, you know, strikes you as just wrong, wrong, wrong. And so Jesus gets word, not that somebody somewhere is sick, Lazarus is sick. And he says, "Thank you for the information. Guys, sit back down. We're not going anywhere." And for 2 days, he did nothing. You have felt that in your life, I guarantee you, haven't you? "God, help me, God, help me, God, help me, God. You know, I need a job, God. I'll pray for God. I'll listen, I'm God. I'm, you know, hello, God, please. And I promise and I'll go to church and I'll give money. And, you know, I'll let my kids be missionaries and, I'll, you know, whatever I got to do, God, you know." Nothing. Verse 7. And then, after 2 days of inactivity, 2 days while Mary and Martha suffer, 2 days while Mary and Martha watch their brother die, 2 days where Mary is watching Lazarus while Martha is watching the road to see if Jesus is coming. And then they swap off and one takes care of Lazarus while the other one looks for Jesus. And they ask everybody coming from that direction, "Have you seen the teacher Jesus and his disciples? Have you seen, we've sent word, the messenger came back, we know he got word. Has anyone seen Jesus?" And they slowly watch their brother die. And then, verse 7, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." Now, Judea is close to Bethany, this village where Lazarus lives, and Judea has not been a happy place for Jesus and his disciples. And so to go to Bethany is really to go to Judea or to pass through. And so verse 9, "But Rabbi," his disciples said, a short one, in case you've forgotten Jesus, they were good at refreshing Jesus' memory. We are too. You know, "Jesus, remember what I did and said." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you." You remember that little incident, okay? And understanding that since we're your followers, if they try to stone you, they're really trying to stone us. So I'm thinking, where else could we go? These are the heroes of the faith, the people we name our children after and buildings are built for, the saints. "A short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you are going back? Hey, I like the idea of just sit here. Hey, Jesus, whoa, remember the time that the guy came to you and said, 'My servant is sick,' and you were going to go to his house, and he said, 'Oh, you don't need to go to my house,' and you just said the word, and the servant was healed? Let's do one of those. Let's just do that again, okay, guys? Let's all hold hands in a circle and hum a song, and Jesus, and maybe light a fire, and Jesus, you know how you can heal people without going there? I think this is the perfect time to heal somebody without going there. Because we don't want to be stoned. And we, of course, it's not really us. We don't want to see you stoned. And then Jesus does a little lesson for a couple of verses there, and I love this, and I'm not going to teach the lesson. It's a couple of verses, and he confuses everybody there. And at the end of it, it's so funny because Thomas, the disciples realize, looks like we're going to Bethany anyway, into Judea, and Thomas is kind of like Eeyore. Remember the little Puchians, the Eeyore, the Glum, or the Eeyore, somebody else, Glum, and then Eeyore is kind of real negative. Are you with me? Okay. And Thomas is, well, we might as well go on and die with him. That's what he says. It's in the Bible. He says, well, let's go to Judea and we'll just die with him. Okay. Because it's like, looks like we're going. Verse 11. After he has said this, you need to read the Bible. After he has said this, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up. Verse 12, his disciples, now they're excited. Oh, good. And I don't know. How did he know he's asleep? I don't know. It's Jesus. Verse 12. And Jesus said, and the disciples said, Lord, verse 12, if he sleeps, he'll get better. Says, we don't need to go. That's great. He's asleep. I mean, if he's sleeping, that means the fever's broken. He's resting calmly. How did he know he's asleep? I don't know. Jesus, we really don't need to go there. Verse 13, and Jesus had been speaking about his death. But his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. Verse 14, so then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. Huh? Yeah, he's dead. Well, okay, you know that? Yeah, he's dead. You know he died? He died. Well, then why didn't we go? Well, of course, we don't really want to go, but I didn't know he's dying. So now there's all this confusion, this drama. Wait a minute. The one you love Mary, you love Martha. They've done everything they could for us. You knew he was sick. As soon as you found out he was sick, you sat us back down. We sat here for 2 days, and now you tell us he's dead? Then listen to this next verse. Verse 15. And for your sake, I am glad I was not there. And for your sake, I'm glad I was not there. To which I want to go, but what about for Lazarus' sake? Okay, and what about Mary's sake? What about Martha's sake? And Gina, this, you got to follow this. This is huge. Jesus looks at his 12 disciples who he's going to hand the whole thing off to later on. The guys that, you know, kind of scared all the time, terrified at sea, you know, running around, denying him later. He says, for your sake, for you, the 12 of you, for your sake, I'm glad I wasn't there, and I'm glad he died, and I'm glad Mary and Martha went through everything they went through watching their brother die, and I'm glad I wasn't there, and I'm glad for the disappointment they have in me, and I'm glad for the mystery surrounding this whole thing, and I'm glad for the Jews that are around them saying, see, I told you he wouldn't come, and see, he's not who he said he was. I'm glad for all that because I have something so big and so major and so overarching that I want you to learn. I am willing for one I love to die and for people who I love's heart to be broken. That's how important this lesson is I'm about to teach you. And for your sake, I'm glad I was not there. And then this little Greek word that's translated into two English words, so that. It's called a henna clause. It's just one little Greek word, henna, which means, and now I'm going to give you the reason. Now I'm going to give you the purpose behind this. Now I'm going to let you in on what's really going on. You want to know why I'm glad we weren't there? You want to know why I sat you back down? You want to know why we stayed here and I let him die and let Mary and Martha's hearts be broken and their faith be turned to ashes? So that you may, what's the word? Believe. Wait. So there's believe and there's pain and heartache and death and suffering. And you're telling me in your economy, belief is more important than being healed? I mean, I know faith is important, everything. We got to believe, you know, it's great. But are you telling me you would allow people you love, whose name you know, whose home you visited in, you would allow one of them to die? You would allow their sisters to sit there and watch them die just so we could have bigger faith? Is it that big a deal to you? Is it worth that to you? Jesus would say, yeah. Wait, Jesus, you like set this whole thing up to teach us a lesson about faith? Yeah. Is it really worth that? Yep. You would sacrifice them so something about us gets changed, you know, in terms of the way we view you? Yep. Wow. It's hard to believe God would do that. In fact, some of you listening are listening here today, you've said one of your things you don't like about Christianity is you've seen so much pain in the world. You've said, well, I don't believe in a God who would. You can fill in your own blank. I don't believe in a God that would. I don't believe in a God who would. In other words, you can't believe in a God who would, and it's all the bad things. Allow this and cause children and all this. I need you to know something. This is something that's good for you to know. If you wouldn't believe in a God who would allow and would, all that, then you don't really believe in the God of the Bible, and you don't believe in Jesus. And I'm not telling you what you do and don't believe. I'm just telling you this is a really, really dramatic moment in the life of Jesus. You know why I think this really happened? This is too severe to make up. This is in total opposition to everything else we want to believe about God. And Jesus says, guys, I set this thing up. That's how important it is for me that you have big, bold, audacious, strong faith in me.